Hello, everybody. My name is Malini Lakshminarayan, and I am here to speak to a friend and colleague, Esperand, who I have had the privilege of working with for, I think, about 2 years, more than 2 years now, getting to know her work, her advocacy in terms of fighting for the rights of victims of sexual violence and conflict. And for this reason, I thought it would be a great opportunity to hear some of her thoughts on the Hague Principles, on sexual violence, because of her role until now in helping us to shape these principles and the tools, that might be used by other survivor activists in developing, a useful guide in a sense, in making sure that others can also hear about and understand the goals of the Hague Principles. So I'm joined here by Esperand. Maybe to just to begin, it would be great if you can tell our audience a little bit about your own work, your own advocacy and awareness raising, both I know, of course, in South Africa, but also in Burundi.
Yes. Hi, everyone. I'm Esperande. Originally, I'm from Burundi, but I'm based in South Africa. Since 2014, I become activist against gender-based violence. My work normally is just to work with network of survivors, basically in Burundi and in South Africa. I already set up like two network I'm work with, and also I'm a member of SEMA Global Network from 2017. My focus in advocacy work mainly in South Africa, we focus to church leaders or faith leaders. We do what we call speak out. Speak out our experience in the churches, asking the church leaders and government to support survivors and also to understand what the survivors go through. And also in Burundi, I do the same. Thank you so much, Marini.
Yes, great. And as you say, exactly, you help help to really get the message of survivors across to those key stakeholders. And I think that's why it's so important to have a voice like yours, because that is the one that we need to be listening to. And I think that's also why the drive behind the Hague Principles on sexual violence has also been to really take this survivor-centered approach. And really understand when we're talking about sexual violence and when we're trying to understand it, that discussion should really actually begin from the survivors themselves. So I think it's great that you already have a lot of experience with this, and making sure that that voice is heard. And of course, we've had a lot of conversations up until now about the need for a document like the Hague Principles. And what I really liked is that you've stressed the idea that it's a very inclusive document, which is of course one of the main aims. So I was just wondering, maybe you could just talk about that a little bit more. What for you makes it so inclusive, and why do you feel that that's really something that's necessary right now?
For me, this document was very important when I read it. First of all, in the area of my work from a long time, we focused only on women as survivors. Maybe because what we went through and also what our society or community educate us. But I was very, very excited and happy when I saw here the document. There is a different kind of case studies from all over the world. Not really only women are suffering, but also men, and also lesbian, AGPR community. So that was important. For example, I was able to see like men in one of the case studies I read, it was a really painful story how the men get raped and also organization ignore them, not really help them, and they get stigma and no one cares. Yet what I know, rape is rape. Sexual violence is a silence killer. So, but in this document, I was very happy to see that all survivors from a different context and identities and sexual orientation was really present in. So that's what's very important for me, and I was very happy for that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very, very clear. And when we're talking about, so we talk about the different types of victims, of contexts, which is very important. But then there's also, of course, this main goal of talking about different types of sexual violence. So I'm curious, in your own words, for you as a survivor activist, why is it so important that we talk about these different forms of sexual violence?
Yeah, normally, in a court of law, for example, in a court of law, they focus on intercourse. And most of the time, in a country in Africa where I am, and also in the examples I saw in the study cases, it's clear that most of people focus, or communities focus, on intercourse as sexual violence. But in this document, it was a clear, for example, I was able to see a woman from Iraq. When you take out the scarf from their head, it's a sexual abuse, which really it can be helpful to understand that sexual violence is not only about intercourse, it's more than that, you know, because most of the time everything starts slowly by touching and by just not caring that what they touch doesn't need to be touched. So I believe this document gives us different kind of type of abuse, which it can be psychological wound or physical wound. For example, there's another type of sexual violence where, for example, in this document show that in wartime, soldiers can ask a woman to dance, naked dance. They never touch them, but you are dancing naked. So that's also kind of sexual abuse, you know, although it's not intercourse. So I believe it will be helpful to understand that there is a different kind of sexual abuse, which is a humiliation to the woman, depend in which context you are in. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe it was in our previous discussions you made such an interesting point related to this idea that it also brings about a change in mentality and change in culture when we also start talking about these other forms, because it's not only rape that needs to be changed, but it's just a more general attitude towards women, towards victims, towards what, yeah, is a violation of one's own autonomy of their body. So I think that was also something very interesting, very important remark that you made.
Yes, it's just to know that when I say no, it's no. You don't guess, you know, because that's what happened, because the way community and the society define sexual abuse is a totally different way a victim or a survivor seeing it. So I think this document will educate community and readers that when I say this kind of behavior toward me as a survivor is inappropriate, then we understand if it's really, if we used it wisely. It's very clear that depend. No, it's no. When I say it's inappropriate, it's inappropriate. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it. And if we bring it back to your own work, as we already mentioned, as you mentioned, you've been active for a very long time. I think you have a lot of experience. I've seen what you've done already in the Global Network and SEMA, as part of work with the Mukwege Foundation too. And yeah, what strikes me there is actually, yeah, you've so much other experience that I think you can share with others, that you can share with other survivors in the communities you're working in, with church leaders. So I'm curious if you have this toolkit, if you have this document at the end, that can really help you to shape, you know, a campaign or an awareness-raising activity. How do you feel you can best implement the toolkit that is being created for survivor advocates, this idea behind the campaign of showing sexual violence? What will it mean for your own work?
Like, for example, which I'm going, the part I'm going to focus on just from next year, we need to include men survivor in the network, because I learned, even myself, I used to be, I say, confess, I used to be a feminist who believe that only women who are really survivors. But recently, I just learned that as long as we don't include everyone, include men and other LGBTI community, we are not going to succeed in fighting this sexual violence. So, for example, if I want to do advocacy on with faith leaders, because abuse or sexual abuse of women, of men, sorry, is a taboo. So, for example, I will take one study case of men who are abused, how they feel, what they go through, because it's here in this document, and read literally as it is, and ask the faith leaders just to have a discussion, a conversation. And from there, I believe they will know that there are men outside there who are suffering, and maybe the conversation will start from there. Another example, it's where, like, in my workplace, on my experience, when we say I'm raped, automatically they ask you your dress code, how you was dressed, what time you was outside, you know, and all these things in this document to show that only take even your scalp on your head, it's abuse, you know. So it will be helpful to use this study case. And people or our leaders, we learn that even in other parts of the world, there is abuse which is taking a place, and they can learn from this that they can easily and have a conversation, and things can change. I think the study cases in this document will be very, very, very helpful. Yeah, they will be very, very helpful. And also advocacy for court cases. Because because under the law, it may take a long time, but under the law, most of the time they focus on intercourse. But it's clear that there is a lot of kind of sexual abuse, and abuse is more beyond only sexual intercourse, you know. So I think maybe in years to come, if we do good advocacy, our system of court will change and see that sexual violence is not only intercourse, it's more than that, and it's a silence killer. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think you raise a very good point. Also, with the experience I've had with other activists and advocates working to change the situation for victims of sexual violence, there's often a lot of eagerness to do so, a lot of will to do so, but sometimes just starting that discussion, knowing how to start that discussion is a bit, yeah, the challenging point. And I think now you've really highlighted well how these documents, how these tools and the Hague principles can help to start those discussions, which is very crucial. And I also really like, I think what you do is highlight a bit with the case studies, especially how there is this global element, of course, and how we can hear from one another and learn from one another and use each other's experiences around the world, in fact, not just in one region, one country, one community. So I think those are both very, very important points. I'd just like to ask if there's anything else you'd like to add before we close this discussion.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for making available this document. It was a privilege for me to read it, and I learned a lot, and I'm grateful forever. And it's also challenged me the way, although I have been activist from a long time, so I learned a lot, which is going to be helpful in my work. You know, thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks very much, Esperon, and thanks again for sharing your experiences. And I'm looking forward to seeing how these will be implemented next year, when, of course, we will follow up and hear more about your work. So thanks very much.
Yeah. Thank you.